7. Watch our backs. Collapse. The betrayer. Rusted and dead nearly 6 decades, the vessel lay smashed and ruined on the cratered mudflats, its once mighty hull torn open and buckled almost beyond recognition. Its towering Gothic spires, like the precincts of a mighty city, lay fallen and twisted. Its buttresses and archways hung with decaying fronds of huge, web-like vines. Its keel was broken, as though it had struck the moon's surface belly first, and many of the upper surfaces had caved in, the decks below open to the elements. Swathes of mossy greenery covered the hull, and her command spire speared into the sky, warp vanes and tall vox masts bending in the moaning wind. Loken thought the scene unbearably sad. That this should be the final resting place of such a magnificent vessel seemed utterly wrong to him. Pieces of debris spotted the landscape, twisted hunks of rusted metal, and incongruous personal items that must have belonged to the ship's crew and had been ejected during the massive impact with the ground.
"Thrown," breathed Abaddon.
"How?"
was all Aximand could manage.
"It's the glory of Terra, all right," said Erebus. "I recognize the warp array configuration of the command deck. It's Temba's flagship."
"Then Temba's already dead," said Abaddon, in frustration. "Nothing could have survived that crash."
"Then who's broadcasting that signal?" asked Horus.
"It could have been automated," suggested Torgadon. "Maybe it's been going for years."
Loken shook his head. "No. The signal only started once we breached the atmosphere. Someone here activated it when they knew we were coming."
The War Master stared at the massive shape of the wrecked spaceship, as if by staring hard enough he could penetrate its hull and discern what lay within.
"Then we should go in," urged Erebus. "Find whoever is inside, and kill them."
Loken rounded on the First Chaplain.
"Go inside? Are you mad? We don't have any idea what might be waiting for us. There could be thousands more of those things inside, or something even worse."
"What is the matter, Loken?" snarled Erebus.
"Are the sons of Horus now afraid of the dark?"
Loken took a step towards Erebus and said,
"You dare insult us, word-bearer."
Erebus stepped to meet Loken's challenge, but the Mournival took up position behind their newest member, and their presence gave the First Chaplain pause. Instead of pursuing the matter, Erebus bowed his head and said,
"I apologize if I spoke out of turn, Captain Loken. I sought only to erase the gross stain on the Legion's honor."
"The Legion's honor is our own to uphold, Erebus," said Loken. "It is not for you to tell us how we must act."
Horus decided the matter before further harsh words could be exchanged.
"We're going in," he said.
The rippling fogbank followed the Astartes as they advanced towards the crashed ship, and the Titans of the Legio Mortis followed behind, their legs still wreathed in the mists. Loken kept his bolter at the ready, conscious of the sounds of splashing water behind them, though he told himself that they were just the normal sounds of this world, whatever that meant. As they closed the gap, he drew level with the War Master and said,
"Sir, I know what you will say, but I would be remiss if I didn't speak up."
"Speak up about what, Garvil?" asked Horus.
"About this. About you leading us into the unknown."
"Haven't I been doing that for the last 2 centuries?
Asked Horus.
"All the time we've been pushing out into space, hasn't it been to push back the unknown? That's what we're here for, Garvil. To render that which is unknown, known."
Loken sensed the commander's superlative skills of misdirection at work, and kept himself focused on the point. The War Master had an easy way of steering conversations away from issues he didn't want to talk about.
"Sir, do you value the Mournivale's counsel?"
asked Loken, taking a different tack. Horus paused in his advance and turned to face Loken, his face serious.
"You heard what I told that Remembrancer in the embarkation deck, didn't you? I value your counsel above all things, Garvil. Why would you even ask such a question?" "Because so often you simply use us as your war dogs, always baying for blood, having us play a role instead of allowing us to keep you true to your course," Then say what you have to say, Gavio.
And I swear I will listen, promised Horace.
With respect, sir, you should not be here leading this spear tip, and we should not be going into that vessel without proper reconnaissance. We have three of the Mechanicum's greatest war machines behind us. Can we not at least let them soften up the target first with their cannons?
Horace chuckled.
You have a thinker's head on you, my son. But wars are not won by thinkers. They are won by men of action. It has been too long since I wielded a blade and fought in such a battle, against abominations that seek nothing more than our utter destruction. I told you on murder that had I felt I could not take the field of battle again, I would have refused the position of War Master.
The Mournival would have done this thing for you, sir, said Lurkin. We carry your honour now. You think my shoulders so narrow that I cannot bear it alone?
Asked Horace, and Lurkin was shocked to see genuine anger in his stare.
No, sir. All I mean is that you don't need to bear it alone.
Horace laughed and broke the tension. His anger quite forgotten, he said.
You're right, of course, my son. But my glory days are not over, for I have many laurels yet to earn.
The War Master set off once more.
Mark my words, Gavio Lurkin. Everything achieved thus far in this crusade will pale into insignificance compared to what I am yet to do.
Despite the War Master's insistence on leading the Astartes into the wreck, he consented to Loken's plan of allowing the Titans of the Legio Mortis to engage the target first. All three mighty war engines braced themselves and, at a command from the War Master, unleashed a rippling salvo of missiles and cannon fire into the massive ship. Flaring blooms of light and smoke rippled across the ship's immensity, and it shuddered with each concussive impact. Fires caught throughout its hull, and thick plumes of acrid black smoke twisted skyward like signal beacons, as though the ship were trying to send a message to its former masters. Once again, the War Master led from the front, the mist following them in like a smoggy cape of yellow. Lurkin could still hear noises from behind them, but with the thunderous footfalls of the Titans, the crackling of the burning ship, and their own splashing steps, it was impossible to be sure what he was hearing.
"Feels like a damn noose," said Togaden,
looking over his shoulder and mirroring Loken's thoughts perfectly.
"I know what you mean. I don't like the thought of going in there, I can tell you that." "You're not afraid, are you?" asked Lurkin, only half joking. "Don't be flippant, Garvey," said Togaden. "For once I think you're right. There's something not right about this."
Lurkin saw genuine concern in his friend's face, unsettled at seeing the joker Togaden suddenly serious. For all his bluster and informality, Tarek had good instincts, and they had saved Loken's life on more than one occasion.
"What's on your mind?" he asked.
"I think this is a trap," said Togaden.
"We're being funneled here, and it feels like it's going to get us inside that ship." "I said as much to the War Master."
"And what did he say?"
"What do you think?"
"Ah," nodded Torgadden. "Well, you didn't seriously expect to change the commander's mind, did you?"
"I thought I might have given him pause. But it's as if he's not listening to us anymore. Erebus has made the commander so angry at Tember, he won't even consider any other option than going in and killing him with his bare hands."
"So what are we to do?"
asked Torgadden, and once again, Lurkin was surprised.
"We watch our backs, my friend. We watch our backs."
"Good plan," said Togaden. "I hadn't thought of that. And here I was all set to walk into a potential trap with my guard down."
That was the Togaden that Lurkin knew and loved. The rear quarter of the crashed Glory of Terror reared up before them, its command decks pitched upwards at an angle, blotting out the diseased sky. It enveloped them in its dark, cold shadow, and Lurkin saw that getting into the ship would not be difficult. The gunfire from the Titans had blasted huge tears in its hull, and piles of debris had spilled from inside, forming great ramps of buckled steel like the rocky slopes before the walls of a breached fortress. The War Master called a halt and began issuing orders.
"Captain Sidere, you and your assaulters will form the vanguard."
Lurkin could practically feel Luke's pride at such an honor.
"Captain Moy, you will accompany me. Your flame and melter units will be invaluable in case we need to quickly cleanse an area or breach bulkheads."
Varula Moy nodded, his quiet reserve more dignified than Luke's eagerness to impress the War Master with his ardour.
"What are your orders, War Master?"
asked Erebus. His grey armoured word-bearers at attention behind their first chaplain.
"We stand ready to serve."
"Erebus, take your warriors over to the other side of the ship. Find a way in, and then rendezvous with me in the middle. If that bastard Temba tries to run, I want him crushed between us."
The first chaplain nodded his understanding, and led his warriors off into the shadow of the mighty vessel. Then the War Master turned to the Morneval.
"Ezekiel, use the signal locator on my armor to form overlapping echelons around my left. Little Horus, take my right. Torgadon and Loken form the rear. Secure this area and our line of withdrawal. Understood?"
The War Master delivered the orders with his trademark efficiency, but Loken was aghast at being left to cover the rear of their advance. He could see that the others of the Morneval, especially Torgadon, were similarly surprised.
Was this the War Master's way of punishing him for daring to question his orders, or for suggesting that he should not be leading the spear tip, to be left behind?
"Understood," repeated Horus, and all four members of the Morneval nodded their assent.
"Then let's move out," snarled the War Master. "I have a traitor to kill."
Luke Sedere led the assaulters, the bulky backburners of their jump packs easily carrying them up towards the black tears in the side of the ship. As Loken expected, Luke was first inside, vanishing into the darkness with barely a pause. His warriors followed him and were soon lost to sight, as Abaddon and Aximand found other ways inside, clambering up the debris to reach the still smoking holes that the Titans had torn. Aximand gave him a quick shrug as he led his own squads upwards, and Loken watched them go, unable to believe that he would not be fighting alongside his brothers as they went into battle. The War Master himself strode up the piled debris as easily as a man might ascend a gently sloping hill, Varula Moy and his weapons specialists following in his wake. Within moments they were alone on the desolate mudflats, and Loken could sense the confusion in his warriors. They stood awkwardly, awaiting orders to send them into the fight, but he had none to give them. Torgadon saved him from his stupefaction, bellowing out commands and lighting a fire under the Astartes left behind. They spread out to form a cordon around their position, Nero Vipus's scouts taking up position at the edge of the mist, and Bregspur climbing up the slopes to guard the entrances to the glory of terror.
"Just what exactly did you say to the commander?" asked Torgadon, squelching back through the mud towards him.
Loken cast his mind back to the words that had passed between himself and the War Master since they had set foot on Davin's moon, searching for some offence that he might have given. He could find nothing serious enough to warrant his and Torgadon's exclusion from the battle against Temba.
"Nothing," he said. "Just what I told you."
"This doesn't make any sense," said Torgadon,
attempting to wipe some mud from his face, but only serving to spread it further across his features.
"I mean, why leave us out of all the fun? I mean, come on, Moy!"
"Varulam's a competent officer," said Loken.
"Competent," scoffed Torgadon.
"Don't get me wrong, Garvey. I love Varulam like a brother, but he's a file officer. You know it, and I know it. And while there's nothing wrong with that, and Emperor knows we need good file officers, he's not the sort the War Master should have at his side at a time like this."
Loken couldn't argue with Tarek's logic, having had the same reaction upon hearing the War Master's orders.
"I don't know what to tell you, Tarek. You're right, but the commander has given his orders, and we are pledged to obey him."
"Even when we know those orders make no sense?"
Loken had no answer to that. The War Master and Varula Moy led the van of the spear tip through the dark and oppressive interior of the Glory of Terror, its arched passageways canted at unnatural angles, and its bulkheads warped and rusted with decay. Brackish water dripped through sections open to the elements, and a reeking wind gusted through the creaking hallways like a cadaver's breath. Diseased streamers of black fungus and dangling fronds of rotted matter brushed against their heads and helmets, leaving slimy trails of sticky residue behind. The perforated floors were treacherous and uneven, but the Astartes made good time, pushing ever upwards through the halls of putrefaction towards the command decks.
regular, static-laced communication with Cedere's vanguard, informed them of his progress ahead of them, the ship apparently lifeless and deserted. Even though the vanguard was relatively close, Cedere's voice was chopped with interference, every third word or so unintelligible. The deeper into the ship they penetrated, the worse it got.
"Ezekiel," said the Warmaster,
opening the vox mic on his gorget.
"Progress report."
Abaddon's voice was barely recognizable, as crackling pops and wet hissing overlaid it with meaningless babble.
"Moving the rat decks. Keep. We have flank, master."
Horus tapped his gorget.
"Ezekiel. Damn it."
The Warmaster turned to Verulam Moy and said, "Try and raise Erebus," before returning to his own attempts at communication.
"Little Horus, can you hear me?"
More static followed, uninterrupted save for a faint voice.
"Ordnance deck. Slow. Shells. Making safe, but make gress." "Nothing from Erebus," reported Moy. "But he may be on the other side of the ship by now. If the interference we are getting between our own warriors is anything to go by, it is unlikely our armor links will be able to reach him."
"Damn it," repeated the Warmaster.
"Well, let's keep going, sir,"
ventured Moy.
"Might I make a suggestion?"
"If it's that we turn back, forget it, Verulam. My honor and that of the Crusade has been impugned, and I'll not have it said that I turn my back on it."
"I know that, sir. But I believe Captain Loken is correct. We are taking a needless risk here."
"Life is a risk, my friend. Every day we spend away from Terra is a risk. Every decision I make is a risk. We cannot avoid risk, my friend, for if we do, we achieve nothing. If the highest aim of a captain were to preserve his ship, he would keep it in port forever." "You are a fine officer, Verulam, but you do not see heroic opportunities as I do."
"But, sir," protested Moy, "we cannot maintain contact with our warriors, and we have no idea what might be waiting for us in this ship. Forgive me if I speak out of turn, but delving into the unknown like this does not feel like heroism. It feels like guesswork."
Horus leaned in close to Moy and said,
"Captain, you know as well as I do that the whole art of war consists of guessing what is on the other side of the hill."
"I understand that, sir,"
began Moy, but Horus was in no mood for interruptions.
"Ever since the Emperor appointed me in the role of Warmaster, people have been telling me what I can and cannot do. And I tell you I am sick and tired of it," snapped Horus. "If people don't like my opinions, then that's their problem. I am the Warmaster, and I have made up my mind. We go on."
A squealing shriek of static abruptly sliced through the darkness, and Luke Cedere's voice came over the armor link as clearly as if he stood next to them.
"Throne! They're here!" shouted Cedere.
Then everything turned upside down. Loken felt it through the soles of his boots as a tremendous rumbling that seemed to come from the very foundations of the moon. He turned in horror, hearing metal grind on metal with a deafening screech, and watching geysers of mud spout skyward as buried portions of the starship tore themselves free of the sucking mud. The upper sections of the vessel plummeted towards the ground, and the entire ship began tipping over, the colossal rear section arcing downwards with a terrible inevitability.
"Everyone get clear!"
bellowed Loken, as the massive weight of metal gathered speed. Astartes scattered from the falling wreck, and Loken felt its massive shadow like a shroud as his armor's senses shut out the roaring noise of the starship's collapse. He looked back in time to see the wreckage slam into the ground with the force of an orbital strike, the superstructure crumpling under the impact of its own weight and hurling lakes of muddy water through the air. Loken was tossed like a leaf by the shockwave, landing waist-deep in a stagnant pool of greenish scum and disappearing beneath the surface. Rolling to his knees, he saw tsunamis of mud rippling out from the vessel and watched as dozens of his warriors were buried beneath the brownish sludge. The power of the wrecked starship's impact spread from the crater it had gouged in the mud. A brackish rain of muddy water drizzled down, smearing his helmet's visor and reducing visibility to no more than a few hundred meters. Loken climbed to his feet, clearing the action of his bolter
as he realized the shockwave had dispersed the sulphurous fog that had been their constant companion since landing on this accursed moon.
"Sons of Horus, stand ready!"
he shouted, seeing what lay beyond the fog. Hundreds of the dead things marched relentlessly towards them. Not even the armor of a Primarch could withstand the impact of a falling starship, and Horus grunted as he pulled a twisted spar of jagged iron from his chest. Sticky blood coated his armor, the wounds sealing almost as soon as he had withdrawn the metal. His gen-hanced body could easily withstand such trivial punishment, and despite the spinning fall through the decks of the ship, he remained perfectly orientated and in balance on the sloping deck. He remembered the sound of tearing metal, the clang of metal on armor, and the sharp crack of bones snapping as Astarte's warriors were thrown around like children in a funhouse.
"Sons of Horus!" he shouted. "Verulam!"
Only mocking echoes answered him, and he cursed as he realized he was alone. The vox mic on his gorget was shattered, brass wires hanging limply from the empty socket, and he angrily ripped them away. Verulam Moy was nowhere to be seen, and his squad members were similarly scattered beyond sight. Quickly taking stock of his surroundings, Horus could see that he lay partially buried in metal debris on the Armorium vestibule, its ceiling bulging and cracked. Icy water dripped in a cold rain, and he tipped his head back to let it pour over his face. He was close to the bridge of the ship, assuming it hadn't been sheared off on impact with the ground, for surely there could be no other explanation for what had happened. Horus hauled himself from beneath the wreckage and checked to make sure that he was still armed, finding his sword hilt protruding from the detritus of the vestibule. Pulling the weapon clear, its golden blade caught what little light there was and shone as though an inner fire burned within its core. Forged by his brother, Ferus Manus of the 10th Legion, the Iron Hands, it had been a gift to commemorate Horus's investiture as War Master. He smiled as he saw that the weapon remained as unblemished as the day Ferus had held it out to him, the light of adoration in his steel-gray eyes, and Horus had never been more thankful for his brother's skill at the forge's anvil. The deck creaked beneath his weight, and he suddenly began to question the wisdom of leading this assault. Despite that, he still seethed with molten rage for Eugen Tember, a man whose character he had believed in, and whose betrayal cut his heart with searing knives. What manner of a man could betray the oath of loyalty to the Imperium? What manner of base cur would dare to betray him? The deck shifted again, Horus easily compensating for the lurching motion. He used his free hand to haul himself up towards the gaping doorway that led to the warren of passageways that riddled a ship this size. Horus had set foot on the Glory of Terra only once before, nearly 70 years ago, but remembered its layout as though it had been yesterday. Beyond this doorway lay the upper gantries of the Armorium, and beyond that, the central spine of the ship that led through several defense choke points to the bridge. Horus grunted as he felt a sharp pain in his chest, and realized that the iron spar must have torn through one of his lungs. Without hesitation, he switched his breathing pattern and carried on without pause, his eyesight easily piercing the darkness of the vessel's interior. This close to the bridge, Horus could see the terrible changes wrought upon the ship, its walls coated in loathsome bacterial slime that ate at the metal like an acidic fungus. Dripping fronds of waving leech-like organisms suckled at oozing pustules of greenish-brown matter, and an unremitting stench of decay hung in the air. Horus wondered what had happened to this ship. Had the tribes of the moon unleashed some kind of deadly plague on the crew? Were these the means that Erebus had spoken of? He could taste that the air was thick with lethal bacterial filth and biological contaminants, though none were even close to virulent enough to trouble his incredible metabolism. With the golden light of his sword to illuminate the way, Horus negotiated a path around the gantry, listening out for any signs of his warriors. The occasional distant crack of gunfire or clang of metal told him that he wasn't completely alone, but the whereabouts of the battles was a mystery. The corrupted inner structure of the ship threw phantom echoes and faraway shouts all around him until he decided to ignore them and press on alone. Horus passed through the Armorium and into the starship's central spine. The deck warped and canted at an unnatural angle.
flickering glow-globes and sputtering power conduits sparked and lit the arched passageway with blue electrical fire. Broken doors clanged against their frames with the rocking motion of the ship, making a sound like funeral bells. Ahead, he could hear a low moaning and the shuffle of calloused feet, the first sounds he could clearly identify. They came from beyond a wide hatchway, toothed blast doors juddering open and closed like the jaws of some monstrous beast. Crushed debris prevented the doors from closing completely, and Horace knew that whatever was making the noises stood between him and his ultimate destination. Some trick of the diffuse strobing light threw jittering shadows from the mouth of the hatchway, and flickering afterimages danced on his retinas, as though the light came from a picked projector running in slow motion. As the hatchway rumbled closed once more, a clawed hand reached out and gripped the smeared metal. Long, dripping yellow talons sprouted from the hand, the flesh of the wasted arm maggot-ridden and leprous. Another hand pushed through and clamped onto the metal, wrenching open the blast doors with a strength that belied the frailness of the arms. The sensation of fear was utterly alien to Horace, but when the horrifying source of the sounds was revealed, he was suddenly seized with the conviction that perhaps his captains had been right after all. A shambling mob of rotten-fleshed famine victims appeared, their shuffling gaits carrying them forwards in a droning phalanx of corruption. A creeping sensation of hidden power pulsed from their hunger-wasted bodies and swollen bellies, and buzzing clouds of flies surrounded their cyclopean, horned heads. Sonorous doggerel spilled from bloated and split lips, though Horace could make no sense of the words. Green flesh hung from exposed bones, and although they moved with the leaden monotony of the dead things, Horace could see coiled strength in their limbs, and a terrible hunger in each monster's cataracted eyeball. The creatures were less than a dozen meters from him, but their images were blurred and wavering, as though tears misted his vision. He blinked rapidly to clear it, and saw their swords, rusted and dripped with contagion.
"Well, you're a handsome bunch and no mistake," said Horace,
raising his sword and throwing himself forward.
His golden sword clove into the monsters like a fiery comet, each blow hacking down a dozen or more without effort. Spatters of diseased meat caked the walls, and the air was thick with the stench of fecal matter, as each monster exploded with rotten bangs of flesh at his every blow. Filthy claws tore at Horus, but his every limb was a weapon. His elbow smashed skulls from shoulders, his knees and feet shattered spines, and his sword struck his foes down as if they were the mindless automatons in the training cages. Horus did not know what manner of creatures these were, but they had obviously never faced a being as mighty as a Primarch. He pushed further up the central spine of the starship, hacking a path through hundreds of organ-draped beasts. Behind him lay the ruin of his passing, shredded meat that reeked of decay and pestilence. Before him lay scores more of the creatures, and the bridge of the glory of terror. He lost track of time, the primal brutality of the fight capturing the entirety of his attention, his sword strikes mechanical and bludgeoning. Nothing could stand before him, and with each blow, the War Master drew closer to his goal. The corridor grew wider as he pushed through the heaving mass of cyclopean monsters, the golden sheen of his sword and the flickering uncertain lights of the corridor making it appear that his enemies were becoming less substantial. His sword chopped through a distended belly, ripping it wide open in a gush of stinking fluids. But instead of bursting open, the meat of the creature simply vanished like greasy smoke in the wind. Horace took another step forwards, but instead of meeting his foes head-on with brutal ferocity, the corridor was suddenly and inexplicably empty. He looked around, and where once there had been a host of diseased creatures bent on his death, now there were only the reeking remains of hacked-up corpses. Even they were dissolving like fat on a griddle, vanishing in hissing streamers of green smoke so dark it was almost black.
"Throne," hissed Horace, revolted by the sickening sight of the liquefying meat, and finally recognizing the taint within the ship for what it was.
A charnel house of the warp, a spawning ground of the immaterium. Horace felt fresh resolve fill his limbs as he drew closer to the multiple blast doors that protected the bridge, more certain than ever that he must destroy Yugen Temba. He expected yet more legions of the warp-spawned things, but the way was eerily quiet, the silence punctuated only by the sounds of more gunfire, which he was now sure was coming from beyond the hull, and the patter of black water on his armour. Horus made his way forward, cautiously, brushing sparking cables from his path, as, one by one, the sealed blast doors slowly rumbled open at his approach. The whole thing reeked of a trap, but nothing could deny him his vengeance now, and he pressed onwards. Stepping onto the bridge of the Glory of Terror, Horus saw that its colonnaded immensity had been changed from a place of command to something else entirely. Mouldering banners hung from the highest reaches, with long-dead corpses stitched into the torn fabric of each one. Even from here, Horus could see that they wore the lupine grey uniforms of the 63rd Expedition, and he wondered if these poor souls had stayed true to their oaths of loyalty.
"You will be avenged, my friends,"
he whispered, as he stepped further into the bridge. The tiered workstations were smashed and broken, their inner workings ripped out and rewired in some bizarre new way, meters-thick bundles of coiled wire rising into the darkness of the arched ceiling. Throbbing energy pulsed from the cables, and Horus realized that he was looking at the source of the Vox signal that had so perturbed Loken on the way in. Indeed, he fancied he could still hear the words of that damned voice whispering on the air, like a secret that would turn your tongue black were you to tell it.
"Nergleth,"
it hissed over and over. Then he realized that it wasn't some auditory echo from the ship's Vox, but a whisper from a human throat. Horus's eyes narrowed as he sought the source of the voice, his lip curling in revulsion as he saw the massively swollen figure of a man standing before the captain's throne. Little more than a heaving mass of corpulent flesh, a terrific stench of rank meat rose from his fleshy immensity. Flying things with glossy black bodies infested every fold of his skin, and scraps of grey cloth were stuck to his green-grey flesh, gold epaulets glinting and silver frogging hanging limply over his massive belly. One hand rested in the glutinous mess of an infected wound in his chest, while the other held a sword with a glitter sheen like diamond. Horus dropped to his knees in anger and sorrow as he saw the slumped corpse of an Astartes warrior sprawled before the decayed splendour of the bloated figure. Verulam Moy, his neck obviously broken, and his sightless eyes fixed upon the decaying corpses hanging from the banners. Even before Horus lifted his gaze to Moy's killer, he knew who it would be. Yugen Temba, the Betrayer.